Author of the Week, featuring another great creator of narratives for the human race on Southside Broadcasting and Siren Radio.
It was, I think, the 18th century where William Hone and George Cruikshank effectively started what currently we would regard as satire, in which they were criticising the monarchy at the time and using satirical woodcuttings to actually address their point. And indeed, they actually managed to get away with a satirical version of the Lord's Prayer in many ways. Okay, that was a few hundred years ago, but what is the state of satire today in the 21st century? Well, apparently not great, according to general findings, and specifically with respect to our next guest, who has indeed been warned in various times that he'd be shot, stabbed, and run over in a string of menacing messages received after posting mocking messages and articles about President Putin's invasion of the Ukraine. So let's talk about the role of satire, the importance of satire, and so on with the aforementioned journalist and indeed editor of satirical English newspaper, The Daily Squib. It's the fabulous Orr Essendon. How are you all?
Hello there. Hi. How's it going? Yeah, great.
You're good. And, you know, clearly a few years ago we had the tragedy, and I think that's certainly not to underplay the whole issue of the Charlie Hebdo case. I mean, that was one issue, obviously, in France, and many folk will be able to remember the Je suis Charlie campaigns. Many of my students, even now, actually, will address this particular topic in terms of freedom of speech. And it would seem from your own experience, not even from a religious point of view, but it seems that even any kind of attempt at using satire to address issues such as you mentioned, the invasion of the Ukraine, can also lead to an awful lot of threats.
Yeah, indeed. excuse me. Receiving phone calls from out of nowhere, I don't know how they get my number, but it just goes with the territory. I mean, they're just shouting down the phone in Russian or Chinese. It's just part of the territory with satire. I mean, I have to have 3 logins just to get into my site because it's attacked on a daily basis so much.
Initially, we hear this and we hear a great deal about, obviously, freedom of speech. Don't have to actually do much trawling of the web to find that there are an awful lot of hate watchers out there. There are an awful lot of folk who will take a delight. And in some instances, they'll end up with prison sentences as well in terms of putting a lot of viewpoints together that are quite deliberately obnoxious and counter the sort of general view of the whole system. But surely in a democracy, freedom of speech is exactly that. I mean, there's the old line that for evil to prosper, all that's needed is for good people to do nothing. In many ways, I mean, I go back to Hone and Cruikshank and the lines back in the 1800s. If it hadn't been for satirists kind of raising these issues in many ways, arguably nothing would have ever changed. People would have been dissatisfied with the status quo, but they wouldn't have had the opportunity to effectively put change into place.
Well, as Juvenal said, difficile satura non scribere, which means it's difficult not to write satire. And that's more prevalent today as in the past. I mean, 2,500 years ago in Roman times. So it's essential to society in a sense, because it brings forward it's a sort of front against totalitarianism, you know, ridiculous hypocrisy. And today you've got all the sort of narcissists and all sorts of things that, you know, the human condition has not changed since those years ago.
I think it's 15 years ago, 2007, when you founded the satirical news website, The Daily Squib, the intention to ridicule foolishness, vice, corruption, pomposity, and so on. I mean, there was the sort of notion that satire prospers best in an era where we do have objectionable governments in place, whether that's objectionable governments of a militaristic nature, whether it be an authoritarian nature, or various other aspects. And you know, looking at the cross-media approach of it, as well as publications like Private Eye, TV shows like Spitting Image, they all base themselves on satire up to a point. Is this something which, in terms of when you set up the Daily Squib, you kind of intended to really not just, well, partly poke fun, but also flag up the inequities in society and the challenges where people do seem to be effectively doing what they will without any accountancy whatsoever?
Yeah, it's a simple mirror to what is going on. And one looks at it in a satirical sort of manner and mirrors that in a sort of, you know, the sort of dualistic fashion, you know, the Jungian sort of thing and paradoxical. I mean, that's why Google has no sort of algorithm for what I do. And there's been serious censorship from Google towards the Daily Squib and all the other big tech people.
That's very much the other issue, or isn't it? That on the one hand, you've got the unhinged area of society, and we talked about accountability and folk who might be triggered off into a particular rage by something.
Well, people are looking to be offended. Sorry to butt in. They're actively going out there looking to be offended, and the Daily Squib is just a mere reaction to certain groups of these people, etc. Who are actively looking to be triggered, and they love it when they are triggered, and they mob together on the social networks and find their target and then get that person or that a brand cancelled. For example, Dilbert has just been cancelled as well. You know, Dilbert, the cartoonist.
Absolutely. And was he upsetting office workers? I mean, you know, it's ludicrous in a whole heap of ways, basically, because ultimately upsetting office workers as upsetting company managers, because they were very much at the heart of Dilbert's address. Yeah. I mean, as we mentioned, sadly, this year we lost Professor Brian Winston from the University of Lincoln. He was very much a key proponent and an advocate of free speech. And again, this whole notion of the right to offend.
It's a human condition, you know.
Yeah. So from that perspective, and you've raised a couple of other key points there, or in terms of cancel culture, in terms of the ways in which people will gather together, quite literally looking for the least thing to offend them. It seems to come very much from a range of issues. You've got obviously religious aspects. We talked about that with the Charlie Hebdo campaign. We have aspects relating to, I suppose, the ideological reference of where people actually are, and you know, in a world in which apparently there are 63 genders, it's pretty difficult to kind of,
that's in the book.
not necessarily sort of work through that process of conceivably actually causing challenges, and that old line which we used to use a few years ago, which was "no offense, none taken," seems to have actually gone completely. And as you say, we seem to have this scenario where, in terms of offence in general, there are concerns. And I mean, let's move on to the book itself, etc. What has been your response in terms of producing this, really to address the challenges that we're faced? Here we are in the 21st century, where we've just clearly had a huge period of mourning for a much beloved monarch, and so on. But somebody who clearly was often the fulcrum for a number of critical and some might say offensive comments, but you know, she didn't actually sort of invoke capital punishment to actually say off with their heads, shall we say. You know, in a sense, we take it, we develop it, we move on.
Yes, I mean, the book is, it's been an absolute pleasure writing this book, because it's like 15 years of my work. And I've sort of compiled it. I actually designed the whole book myself as well, the interior of it. And I had to learn how to, you know, software and all that stuff. So it's been an absolute pleasure. But I mean, the thing is with it, the book is it's a historical sort of moment in time, capturing the sort of internet world and the global sort of world as well. And there are silly articles, you know, of course, but there's also some serious sort of juvenilian side to it as well. Yeah, it's being released on October the 1st anyway, if, you know, on Curtis Press, if anyone wants it. You know, it's good for a toilet reading.
Oh, no, don't be so self-deprecating. It's important to actually look at this, this whole process. Again, looking at the text itself, I mean, again, it's the Daily Squib, an anthology from 2007 to 2022. Again, the other key point that certainly attracted our attention, which is satire arguably now more important than ever, given the rise in nationalism and extremism. And yes, that is something where, again, as I mentioned, you've got on the one hand the locally sourced areas of cancel culture, and then you've got, some might almost say, the state-sponsored aspects.
Geopolitical, yes. Yeah. I mean, the thing is, one has a sort of worldview, you know, their model of the world, and the Daily Squib looks at everything. It's got this sort of all-seeing eye of, pardon the phrase, you know, of everything. I mean, it's not just domestic, it's international, and I like to see everything. And that's what I think makes it stand out from everything else, because a lot of stuff is just, you know, quite blinkered. And I like to just, like, it's like a sponge, you just take in everything. I have to read the news every day for at least an hour, every news article, everything. And then I get my viewpoint from that, of what is really going on.
Talk again about public figures, etc. You mentioned, obviously, Meghan Markle, of course, and her concern about issues relating to this. Is it a case of, I'm hesitant to actually say, enhanced sensitivities here? Or is it a case of actually people feeling ultimately that they are so incensed by the slightest sign of criticism that they do resort very much to a knee-jerk reaction to actually say, no, I'm sorry, you know, you need to be cancelled. It needs to go from it. So, you know, again, in a healthy functioning democracy, you cannot really raise a contrary opinion, because even if you try to satirically address both the cancelled and the cancellees, you've got this sort of issue whereby, you know, people will be very concerned. I mean, is this something which means that journalists will become more and more prone to simply rewriting press releases verbatim, that phenomenon of churnalism where no investigation takes place, that effectively you might as well just go to, as indeed sadly does tend to occur in a number of issues, financial journalism in particular, where basically the stories might as well be written by automations and logarithms and algorithms?
Well, they're doing that a lot now, yeah. The problem is that we've sort of entered a puritanical age within the West, and it's almost mirroring what's happening in China, and, you know, the Maoist kind of censorship levels are being transported via big tech in San Francisco towards the population, and they're sort of subverting democracy by canceling the opposition. So if you don't have an opposition, for example, in a election, you could just cancel, you put the opposition way down in search, then you have the preferred biased candidate at the top of search, and you win the election. You know, that's the way it's working now, unfortunately, and that subverts and perverts democracy, because you don't have the voice of the other side anymore, because they're deemed as either fascists or whatever they want to call them. I mean, a hate speech, which is a very erroneous plot, you know.
Well, I mean, again, it comes directly from, of course, the George Orwell term and
thought
the whole
crime,
notion
you know.
Of hate aspects within that, 1984, very much to the fore within that. So, again, allowing for that, what would be your own particular prognosis for, let's say, the next, I want to say decade, the next 5 years? Because, you know, there are a number of geopolitical issues that are actually out there, not only war, not only religious ideology, not only people's personal belief systems. There are issues relating to colonization, decolonization, and so on and so forth. But this whole area of challenging orthodoxy, but also allowing a safe space where lecturers or indeed
oh, don't say safe space.
Well, yeah, but well, yeah. Well, that whole notion of people not being deplatformed, there is a sort of notion to actually have.
You could turn it around, yeah. Safe space, as in a sense that, you know, an opposite a view can be listened to without cancellation.
Yeah,
which is a safe space. That would be a great place to have, but.
Is that likely? I mean, or is it a case of no, it's going to get worse before it gets better, and actually people will be so concerned that they'll just be awaiting the next routine, which would presumably be thought monitors and non-verbal communication sensors designed to effectively detect anybody who might sort of feel as though they are just beginning to think about something which might be not necessarily as the party would suggest, whatever that party happens to be. I mean, again, we're talking about a true authoritarian regime here, which people say, no, it's never going to happen. But the technology is actually
there. The
telescreen,
yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and that's something which...
Sorry, you have these sort of smart devices in houses now, listening to everything you say. Mm. And they claim they're not, but they are. And in the future, one would expect, you know, you have Elon Musk having the sort of chip, the microchip into the brain, and one could expect a possible hive mind, which you generally do have on the internet as well at the moment within social media, which is a hive mind of similar thought patterns, you know, and they all follow each other. Like one news organization will make one headline, then the other one will do the same, the same, the same, the same, the same. And this is a sort of very sort of hive-minded thing, because it's actually instilling through repetition, which is a Soviet technique of, and the fascists in World War II, of course, used that. But it's instilling into the human mind that particular thought pattern or what they want you to think. And if you don't think that way, then you are effectively cancelled because you have not taken on board their programming.
I don't want to go down the line of conspiracy theories and the Davos
but
reset,
it's not
new
a
world
conspiracy
order.
Theory
and it's new just, world order, etc.
Right, but, there but yeah
but this is something which in a sense again is certainly on the negotiating table and is an issue. What advice would you actually give to the listener who might be tuned into this with you know, partially sort of listening, thinking, oh, no, it's not going to happen. It sounds like something out of Minority Report or indeed Brazil or 1984 or any dystopian future text that we've actually got there. Is it too late, or is it a case of, well, you know, as Arthur C. Clarke once said, you know, fire can be used for good or ill. Oh, I mean, you can use fire to keep us warm.
It's at the same people time, like it can, me, people yeah. like, you know, the Daily Squib, who are, I mean, books like this and websites, we're trying to wake people up to not go down that route, and we're doing it with all our might, you know, but it's extremely hard. And especially when you have big tech coming over you and you've got other state factors coming down onto you as well. It's very hard, but it's a daily fight, and that's all I can do.
What advice would you give young journalists or journalists who are maybe just new to the profession, maybe starting their journalism degrees, which, again, some might say, why should we have a degree in journalism? We should actually sort of just be writing about things without being told what to write and so on. But in terms of investigative journalism and so on, what advice would you give them?
Always be true to yourself. Always be true to yourself, and investigate the facts from many different angles, and always stay within your parameters of truth. That's all I can say. Really.
The first printed book, of course, from the Daily Squib, an anthology from 2007 to 2022, presumably available on all online platforms as well as physical copies as well?
Yes. It's on curtispress.com.
Fantastic.
October 1st. Yes, thank you.
It will open up a whole range of things from that point of view. Oh, it's been fascinating addressing.
Thank you, Alex, so much.
A whole range
thank
of things
you.
From that point of view. Well, again, we've got two final questions for you, but we need to ask you them as a matter of course. First of all, have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer on the midweek drive today? Has it been okay for you?
Yeah, it's been great.
That's okay. Yeah, you have to think about it a little bit, but that's all right. It's what we call our customer satisfaction.
Oh, you said Zoomer.
Well, we're not using a telephone. We're not using a Microsoft Teams. We're using Zoom to actually connect. So I figure we use the word Zoomer to connect on that basis. So we just put that in there. So can we look forward to connecting with you again? Will you come back sometime and share with us some of your own thoughts on the importance of satire and why it's critical that in a society that purports to be free, that we do have this freedom of speech opportunity very much to our hands, and we don't lose it, because that is the tragedy, of course. If once lost, it's very, very difficult to regain.
Yes, Alex, it would be an absolute honor to come back. Absolutely.
Well, lots of food for thought there, certainly from the point of view of the editor of satirical English newspaper, the Daily Squib, or Essenbell, and lots also to consider there in terms of censorship and so on. Something which certainly isn't censored, which we're always delighted to feature on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition and feature on its own segment as well, is the awesome Tipperary Tales, astoundingly up to volume 20 now. And so we say, what wonderful Tipperary Tales have you got for us now? Ace author and writer, Jenny Finch.
Hello and welcome back. This episode is actually from New Year 2021. And these are the first of the fortnightly blogs, hopefully alternating with the podcasts of previous episodes on Southside Broadcasting and Siren Radio. I will post a link to the podcast for anyone interested in listening to them after we've recorded them. The new year certainly brought some surprises for us, some rather unwelcome, I have to say. Just before New Year, I realised the kitchen drain was not living up to its name. In fact, it was pouring water from the sink over the paths outside. With a feeling of dread, I began to investigate and discovered the horrors of the grease trap. Installed a number of years ago, this is an extra manhole with a big bucket designed to, yes, trap grease from the wastewater. Now, we are very careful about the fats and oil we pour down the sink. In fact, we don't. We wipe out everything and use the paper to light the fire, so there should have been very little grease in the bucket. How wrong could I be? We had our very own Fatberg. Picture a solid mass, diameter about a foot and more than 6 inches thick, wedged in the top of the manhole. I donned my new extra tough overalls and began to hack it out. After 3 hours, I had dislodged most of it and it was residing in several carrier bags. Then I had to bail out the wastewater to get to the pipes. After another hour, I couldn't reach any further, and the drain showed no sign of clearing. I gave up as the light was fading and it was raining. The next day, I abandoned all finesse and poked, hacked, and chiseled at the pipes, lying flat and stretching down into the drain. Finally, something gave, and it began to clear. The Fatberg was buried in the wood, and I went to have a long, hot shower. We don't know where it's come from, as we are so careful. I suspect it is old fat washing back along the pipe, as the drop to the tank is minimal. I have a nasty feeling we'll need to dig up and reset the drains later. Oh, the joys of rural living. We have space, bird song, and wildlife. We don't have rubbish collections, mains water, drainage, or gas. Well, most days it seems like a fair trade. The next morning I woke to find one of my arms wouldn't move properly. An old injury to my right shoulder had come back to haunt me as the ligament gave way again. A trip to the injury clinic, Irish A&E, was not quite the festive treat we had hoped for, but they were helpful and much quicker than we expected. Now we are in a bit of a quandary. Jackie can't lift and carry heavy things, obviously. I have one usable arm. I won't say good, as I broke both ligaments in the past. It requires some ingenuity to get things done, and some, hoovering for example, are just being abandoned at present. It's amazing how much fluff and dog hair you can scrape up with your feet. A lot of the kitchen equipment we had in Saltburn was left behind, and so we had to replace it. One advantage is we can get modern replacements, and Jackie has a new super does-everything mixer. This is terrific, as she can make bread and bake without having to knead or mix by hand, which is forbidden, and too much of a strain at the moment. We have an array of low-sugar and healthier cakes in the freezer, most stored in identical tubs. Well, after crossing out half a dozen labels and writing on lids, I finally gave up. When we take one out to defrost it, it just goes into a tub labeled cake. I figured if we can't tell what type it is, it's not a success. It has been cold here, though there was barely a dusting of snow last week when we were warned of hazardous blizzard-like conditions. It has rained, though. Oh, how it has rained. I have my grandfather's barometer clock, and it ranges from stormy to very dry. In the middle is change, which in England generally means changing from one range, wet, to another, dry. Here, it seems to mean change every 20 minutes or so. The sun will shine, the clouds scud across the sky, and then the wind blows down the lane. That's the 30-second warning to get under cover before the rain pours down. 5 minutes later, the sun is out again. It takes some getting used to, but the upside is we have many beautiful rainbows over our wood. Oh, and we were without the car for a couple of days as the brake began to smoke. The garage took the wheels off and everything was fine, so it seems we got something wedged in the caliper. The lane outside is a horrible mess with deep holes, torn up surface and pools of water. A lot of farm vehicles drive up and down at a high speed and this rips up the surface, what's left of it. We are slow and careful, but there is too much debris to avoid it all. I had a prescription for heavy painkillers and couldn't get to the pharmacy to collect it. Despite the weather and the horrible road, a young man drove out and delivered it the next day. No charge, he said. There are some lovely people here. You may think this was a grim start to 2022. But in Saltburn, we grew to dread New Year. Either the boiler broke down or one of our pets died. We would wake up to the cold and breathe a sigh of relief. Not this year, we thought, cuddling the dogs into us. Despite the setbacks, we're having a happy New Year and look forward to many more. I had to apologise for a late blog entry. This was due to another spell of drain trouble. Second verse, same as the first. The fat berg broke down a little when I removed it, and some got washed back into the kitchen outlet. This means all the washing up water flooded over the back patio, much to the delight of the dogs. Yes, it was revolting. I managed to clear that pipe, but there are still serious issues with the main drain, way beyond my abilities, even if I hadn't damaged my shoulders again. It's a job for the probably expensive professionals, I fear. But there's the same old problem. Everyone is frantically busy and still no one answers their phone. I've refrained from supplying any more detail or adding photographs in deference to my readers' sensibilities. Enough to say my nice new overalls, which make me look rather like a hobbit, are in need of a boil wash. We are about to try switching the water pump over to the solar panels any day now. It has been cold, frosty on occasions, but bright and dry, so the batteries are full and ready to go. I still have little confidence in the wiring to the final phase of the pump out in the shed, the one section not redone by our excellent electrician. As a precaution, I got some spare fuses, much to the bemusement of the lads in the electrical factors. They were obviously not used to an older white-haired woman requesting C16 and B16 fuse blocks. I thought they were going to refuse to serve me for a minute and had to reassure them I knew what I was doing and how to fit them. Fingers crossed. The electrical shop is just next door to the furniture store, and we finally got the chance to pop in and look around. Those of you following the journey from the start may remember the idiot movers. Not content with damaging items and throwing it all into storage, they left behind a lot of stuff. Some we can replace or do without. Some cannot be replaced. Jackie's sketchbooks, all packed and labelled, are missing. That really hurts, as it had the original photos and source materials too. I have mourned my big desk, a table 3 foot by 5 foot I used for writing. I've tried to work on a small IKEA bench, but couldn't manage it. Well, the shop had another small dining table, same size, a bit higher, but reduced as it had been on display. It's up in my new room and I'm writing again. Strange what a difference a piece of furniture makes, but the surface area is so important. I can have research notes to hand and spread out the maps I need without everything cascading to the floor. That made my day. It was a bit of a difficult week last week as a long-awaited hospital visit was cancelled with little notice. We wanted a medication review, as we always read the leaflets, and several of the pills Jackie was on were supposed to be short-term. Some have strong contraindications with others, and some seem to be doubling up on one job. To our surprise, we got an appointment to see our GP the next day and had a very constructive talk with him. Now we are hoping the main appointment with the cardiology professor goes ahead. A lot of outpatient departments are still closed due to COVID. I have my referral for physiotherapy, but nothing else for a while. No more drain clearing exercises for me. Instead, I'm indulging in some gentle stretching exercises across my lovely new jigsaw puzzle board. Most of my puzzles are on the challenging side. An old Remington typewriter, for example, and an Escher impossible waterfall. Be impressed. Be very impressed. We are lucky enough to live next door to a horticulturist. Yes, we do have one house within waving distance. And Des has been back and cleared the path around the wood. At last, we can go right round without breaking an ankle. We can get at all the trees in the new part too. I did notice there were several other paths crossing the wood, animal tracks worn into the grass. The most trodden path runs back to the roadside, and I was startled to see something had dug up the fatberg and scattered it around. Well, if it doesn't poison them, it'll provide some winter nourishment, I guess. It's all a sort of recycling. Things are getting done now, still slowly, but the end is in sight. Our joiner will fit the doors in the grooming room this week. We've arranged for the electrician to put the timer on the boiler and earth everything. No more scurrying through first thing to put the heating on. We really want the new sink working, but there's still a lot of plumbing to be done. The poor dogs have been brushed and mopped off, but not had a proper bath for a whole year. I think even Charlie, who hates a bath, is getting a bit fed up. We've also got a new wash basin waiting, no more wobbly taps, and a tap for the kitchen that won't go off after 30 seconds. That will be luxury. So that's us, a slice of our Irish life. Enjoy your mains drainage, water and gas. Oh, and your bin collection. Life is certainly different here.
And life is different here, given we have a new Prime Minister and, of course, a new reigning monarch. Jenny, I've got to say, surely there's got to be some way in which you could use the Fatberg to fill in the holes in the road. Because if you got those potholes, which is traditionally what country roads tend to be full of, perhaps if you actually fill them with fat or those Fatbergs, you could maybe smooth the thing through. It's just a suggestion.
It's a good suggestion. The problem is, whatever dug it up and ate it is still going to be hungry by now. The roads will be eaten. Now there's a novelty.
Yeah, well, that's life in the 21st century. So going well, obviously, from your own perspective. And as you look at the news from Britain across the Irish Sea, any thoughts on that one in terms of the momentous history-making experiences? Because when we started, of course, Tipperary Tales, it was the Elizabethan era. Now, of course, it's the Carolean era.
Well, it is, yes. And I wish everybody the very best of luck. And I can say, sure know how to put on a show. Well done.
Poetry and literature, the two things go hand in hand in so many delightful ways. And let's consider, suppose you finally say I'm my own person. Suppose you say no one else is in charge of me. Suppose you tell yourself I'm nobody's bad girl. Suppose you're that kind of woman. Just suppose. Keywords that have been put together in a wonderful package called Phases Poetry by Belinda Betker. And we're delighted to welcome to our Author of the Week, Phase, the fabulous Belinda Betker. How are you, Belinda?
I'm wonderful. How are you?
Good. Excellent. And just share with us, whereabouts in the North American continent are you connecting with us today?
So in Canada, and the province is Saskatchewan, and the city is Saskatoon, which is kind of smack dab in the middle of Saskatchewan. So it's prairie provinces here in Canada.
Excellent. Now, this Phases is your first collection of poetry. Was poetry always a desire that you wanted to pursue? Because often when we speak to writers, they're either prose writers or they're poetry. It's rare that the two actually combine. They tend to go one way or the other. So what was it about poetry in particular that kind of led you on this road?
It started early. I can remember in grade three having to write a poem, and I got an A+, which was, you know, the highest mark you could get. So that was a huge incentive, but it was a combination of rhythm and, of course, rhyme at that time. You know, grade three, I would have been, you know, 8 years old. So it's very much drawn to rhythm and rhyme, and just the sound and feel of poetry attracted me. I was hooked on poetry.
And I mean, clearly, over the centuries, there have been huge swathes of poets who've expressed their deepest thoughts on paper and so on. Inevitably, these things tend to connect with the time period that people have been living to, whether you're Byron, one of the Romantic poets, whether you're even earlier in terms of sonnets and so on and so forth. When we come to Phases, was that something which, again, you were particularly keen on actually addressing? I mean, we see that it's a tribute to the lunar and life cycles, as well as being fierce and richly erotic. So was it something that, again, you kind of felt that this was important to actually be inspired by?
Well, I was always attracted more to the moon than, say, the stars or a sunny day. You know, that was an early on connection when I was young, too. So, you know, phases of the moon and then phases of the life and just the poetry I was writing at different times, it started to come together as an interweaving of you know, the moon in my life and the phases of my life. And they just connected together, and it wasn't probably the original idea for the book, but as these things often do, it evolved that way.
Claire Roberts from the Humber Literary Review writes that phases is a significant contributor to LGBTQ plus literature, or 25 plus literature. The collection explores the trials of a lifelong journey toward knowing, towards identity, and the wayfinding power of embracing the body's sensual nature. So, I mean, in many ways, it kind of appears though this is very much a work that's been a lifetime in progress. Has this been collated together over the weeks and the months to actually produce, obviously, the final finished product?
Yes, absolutely. You know, when I was in my early 40s, I had a health crisis and then a long recovery where I didn't have to work and I had nothing to do but read and recuperate. And I was, you know, it was a life-changing moment because I was like, what do I really want to do with my life? You know, other than work and raise a family and all the things I was doing. And, you know, it came to me immediately that I wanted to get back to writing because it was, you know, a lifelong dream since childhood. And then it got put aside because of life circumstances and challenges and things like that. So the immediate thought was I want to get back into writing. And so I did. I learned more about the writing community in Saskatoon, where I live, and the writer-in-residence program, where the city hires a writer, a professional writer, that anybody in the city and area can consult with on their writing. And they often offer workshops and programming and book launches and readings. And so that was my foot into the doorway of the writing community here. And it just, you know, I just took off from there. So, and around that time, I was starting to realize that I wasn't straight, that I was in a marriage, I was a stepmother, and I couldn't stay in that marriage, and I needed to really be who I was in the world. So I came out in midlife, a couple of years after that surgery and recovery. And that led me on a totally different path, of course. And so that new path, and then, you know, also re-inspired in my writing life, they came together.
We've almost had a triple whammy of authors of the week on this particular feature, because of course we started off with the thoughts of the satirist and a writer and editor of the Daily Squib, Orr Ezenbel, moved on to obviously Jenny Finch's Tipperary Tales. Now we're talking about your good self. Do you feel as though actually, in terms of the continuum of writers' experience, that one of the kind of key aspects of the 21st century is indeed the variety of voices that we are actually hearing, and that actually, despite people often being concerned about issues related to cancel culture and aspects related to that, that we do have ultimately a fairly good and broad-ranging and representative selection of writers in the 21st century.
I draw inspiration from many, many sources, but particularly contemporary. And of course, because I'm Canadian, that was kind of my focus. Margaret Atwood, Lorna Crozier, two extremely well-known Canadian writers who, Margaret, of course, writes everything and anything. And Lorna Crozier, mostly poetry, but they were, it was that thing, you know, when I went to school, mostly what we learned about poetry was that it was a dead language. You know, poetry was hundreds of years old and we really weren't exposed to anything contemporary and more modern. So it was very exciting to realize that there were actually people who do write poetry, you know, here and now, and write about a huge range of experiences, their own experiences, things that are happening in the world, politics, nature, spirituality. And in my case, being a stepmom and then coming out of midlife and then actually getting involved in the drag community here in Saskatoon and becoming a drag king and performing as a drag king and having the title in Saskatoon for a year. So some of the poems in the book are about that, which is not a typical usual evolvement of coming out, but it was something that drew my attention and interest and my interest in performance. I was never into theater so much, but I was always attracted to that sort of thing. So drag is a form of theater.
And you mentioned, of course, poetry often tarred with a brush of being old-fashioned. And I suppose the last popular uprising of poets, we probably had the beat poets of Jack Kerouac and elements within the 60s and early 70s. Of course, we have in Britain poet laureates. We have Carol Ann Duffy, of course, who's connected with the University of Lincoln, who writes extensively in terms of poetic aspects within that. Do you feel as though that there is a resurgence of poetry as a natural literary art form, led, of course, in no small part by the kind of work that you've been doing with phasers?
I think so. Certainly in my local community in Saskatoon, in the province of Saskatchewan here, there's a lot of young people, who are into, what the beat poets started years ago, right? The performance poetries, the poetry slams. I don't know if you have them there as well, but where performance of the poetry is a combination of the poetry itself and again expressing it in rhythm and in usually very arresting fashion. I think some of that, relates to probably rap music and younger music as well. And we had a local pub here years ago. It's not there anymore, but they would have every Sunday night, they had a program called Tonight It's Poetry, and anybody and everybody could come and read their poetry, perform their poetry, present it however they wanted to. And it was extremely popular with the college crowd. It was a standing room only event every Sunday night. And those sorts of venues drew crowds of people that maybe normally wouldn't have attended, something that's called poetry. So it's a very dynamic force in the community here.
And you mentioned, of course, rap music. That was certainly something in which, certainly for providing voice for folk in particular of Afro-American origin, etc., might have felt that they were having difficulty expressing that voice. It has certainly sort of opened up and really raised a whole variety of issues with respect to that. So brings me right to the next question, Belinda. What advice would you give somebody who might be listening to this, who might be dabbling with the idea of poetry, but they thought, I don't know what to actually do? What suggestions would you actually have for the continued development?
First of all, follow your heart. If you're drawn to it, go for it. Find community. And, I did that through, as I mentioned, the Writer in Residence program, the provincial organization here called Saskatchewan Writers Guild, which is probably the best writing guild in the country, in my mind anyway, not biased at all. But they have a lot of programming and offerings for writers of all genres and ages in the province. The term I use is find your people. It evolved from attending book launches, attending literary events. We have an amazing bookstore here in the city called McNally Robinson, and they are hugely supportive of the local writing community. I had my first book launch there. I will be having another one sometime this year, because Phases is actually the one that just came out is a revised and expanded edition of the Phases that came out 3 years ago. So I get to have a second book launch. My book gets a second life. I added 29 new poems to the book from the original, and it's those 29 new poems are just a deeper telling of my life story, the phases of my life.
A continual work in progress. And just for people who might be a bit confused, Phases is P-H-A-S-E-S-E, and not to be confused with the Star Trek Phasers, which of course has an R in it. In case people actually get confused, just want to clarify.
I never
that.
Thought of that.
Well,
that's funny.
It's a thought. So as we kind of progress from that point of view, what are the next plans? Will there be a next phase of phases? Are you still writing vociferously and extensively from that point of view? Or are you okay? So, how do you actually, again, take, I mean, with your drag king scenario, with your writing, etc., how do you juggle the various commitments of life?
I haven't performed as a drag king for a number of years. The community changes, you know, younger people got involved, directions went different ways, but it's still, I still have a real fondness for that time of my life. And I'm still, you know, very close friends with my drag family of the time. But it's just interesting when the first edition of Phases came out, you know, it's a poetic memoir. It's fairly chronological, and people were saying, you know, well, between this poem and this poem, there seems to be a real big gap. Like, what happened in your life in that time? And so, having those ideas in mind, I might sit down to write a poem about in nature, or I write a lot of haiku as well. And then something else would come out that I realized was related to the book and the missing, some of the missing gaps, not all of them, of course, but some of the missing gaps that people were curious about. So now that the second edition has come out and I added those 29 new poems, it'll be interesting to see if more poems come out about my life story. I think, you know, that's probably a direction I lean to anyway, but I also have other projects in mind. So it'll be interesting what happens. I don't know where it will go.
And that's part of the joy of life, surely.
Yes.
Belinda, one thing we occasionally do is we invite authors to maybe provide a short reading of some of their work, etc. Do you have something which you think maybe could be appropriate for the Siren Radio listener, just to actually get a flavour of phases, either new, middling or old, whatever you'd like to go for?
Okay. I think I'll start with a poem that sort of is the first poem that I had accepted for publication. So it's near and dear to my heart, and it's actually a number of years ago. But this also happened around that time of you know, coming to a new awareness about myself and how I wanted to be in the world. This poem is called Pierce. The woman who pierces flesh for a living snaps blue rubber gloves on her long, narrow hands. She arranges her instruments, three silver needles in sealed cellophane, scissor-handled clamp. She positions cotton swabs and alcohol, antibiotic soap. No obvious expression, no earrings, studded eyebrows, or tongue. She says, "I've had everything pierced, everything, and more than once. It's my addiction, an adrenaline rush, pain that proves I'm alive. And after the holes heal, I pierce myself again." She leans close, marks my skin, asks which piercing I want first. "The one that hurts most," I say, and I hold my breath while the first needle pushes through and heat rushes in, and I breathe, breathe to this place of knowing.
Fantastic stuff. And indeed, I echo the thought of phases being mercurial and unpredictable, a celebration of the nonconformist in each of us. Belinda, how can people actually follow you? Do you have various social media accounts? Are you an avid Instagrammer or TikToker or Facebooker? How can people stay in touch with your good self?
I wish I was. I'm a bit of a Luddite when it comes to that. But I do actually have some sessions booked with people who are, you know, well-versed in social media, because I am not. I do have Facebook. I rarely use it. I rarely post, but I'm going to learn all those things. And I have an appointment booked with someone who's going to help me build a website. So that stuff
Watch
is all
space.
In the works.
clearly. Watch this cyberspace, to be precise, which is great stuff. And here we are, wrapped up a podcast as well as broadcasting on Siren Radio's Midweek Drive. Belinda, we've got two final questions to go now to. First of all, have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us on this your Midweek Drive debut?
Pardon me? Sorry, I missed
have that. You had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us? Has it been okay for you? It's our customer satisfaction question.
Yes, absolutely. This has been lovely. Yeah.
Excellent. Then hopefully we'll be able to connect with you again in the not too distant future. Will you be kind enough to return? That.
Yeah, I'd love that.
Excellent. Belinda Betke, of course, the Phases poetry book is available on all good platforms. You get it as a paperback, as an online Kindle book as well from that point of view. Just type in Belinda Betke, Betker, and it's Phases, Phases. On poetry, which is well worth accessing from that point of view. Take care and keep on keeping on.
Okay, thank you for this opportunity. This was lovely. Thank you.